All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Super awesome dude, Mr. Corgi Press himself, Scott Bachman. You can find him at Twitter at Scott A. Bachman, B-A-C-H-M-A-N-N. That is Scott Bachman. Scott, hello, friend. How are you, buddy?
Doing good. Yourself?
I'm well, friend. I'm well. Now, you've been doing comics for as long as I can remember. To be honest with you, I first came across your name at the Erlanger Library when you were doing things for a book you used to write called My Superhero Mom. You were doing like a free comic book day or like some kind of event for that book. So you've been at this for, I mean, a very long time, correct?
It's over 7 years.
Okay, so it's you. So how long have you been working on comics and making books and stuff?
I've been making stories pretty much forever. But I started self-publishing like 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay. And what led you
to... Kind of a soft start. That's why it's a squishy date.
So what led you into the wide, wide world of self-publishing?
Oh, you'd think I would know that as an easy answer. Kind of webcomics was kind of my inspiration because tech had caught up enough that it was pretty easy to publish online. And a lot of people had made some success out of it. So it was different from having to deal with an entirely print-based world. And Comixology was just starting up not too long after that, which provided another complete digital market. And it made an easier entry point as opposed to trying to get into Diamond or something like that.
That makes sense. So you were web comics first before you ever got into the idea of like publishing paper comics.
I've always put my comics out on the web first for free.
Okay.
And then turned around and printed them later.
Now explain to me the world of web comics, because that is something that I don't want to say I missed completely. There were a few web comics that I did enjoy that I still do enjoy to some extent. But the idea of doing a web comic to me always seemed rather daunting, in the sense that much like podcasting, your audience gets to expect work every Wednesday at 4:05 p.m. And if it's not there, they're going to be pissed off. So tell me like some of the, how did you get into web comics? Like what are some of the traps or pratfalls that you can make making web comics? Some of the success stories that you've had personally from web comics?
One of the nicest things about web comics is your audience gets to be much larger than your local audience.
Okay.
Between Comixology and web comics, when I've gone to either of the coasts, I've run into people that know my comic.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's always been phenomenal. I've made friends around the world via being online. Starting out, I didn't do very well on webcomics. I was trying too hard to just take a printed page and throw it up there. I eventually learned how to work with it a little better. One of the biggest changes that I made was I took my basic comic page, cut it in half, and started running it Monday and Friday instead of once a week.
Okay.
Now my audience instantly doubled.
Like, interesting.
No change. Doubled.
Interesting. So So, because I know there have been some web comics that have just posted as much as like a panel per day. Like, how do you decide what to post, how to post, and do you all? I feel like you always have to post something. Like the storytelling feels different because, like, you always have to post that page turn or that mouse click. Is that something that you found intimidating, or did you just kind of, you know, lean into it?
I kind of leaned into it by doing half a page at a time. It's basically like writing a full page comic. It was enough space for me to tell something once, blah, blah words. You'd think I was a writer or something. Doing a full page gives you a lot of room to talk. Doing a half page, you got to tighten everything up an awful lot more.
Okay.
And it made the comic a lot more intense because so much more is happening on the page, because each half a page is a full story, so to speak.
Okay.
Also, by doing it as a web comic, you get feedback because, you know, people can make comments.
Yes.
And that's very weird to get live comments back on a comic.
Now, weird as in like intimidating, or weird as invigorating, or weird as just weird?
It's all three. It really just depends on what you're working on. For whatever reason, I attract an audience that when they like it, they don't say anything. When I make a mistake, they're right there.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's just audiences in general. Like, if you get too much of feedback on something, you've really fucked up pretty bad. You know what I'm saying? And if all is quiet on the Western front, then I think things are good, right? Like, that's how I feel about it, almost everything.
Well, and the weirdest thing, they'll go off on the weirdest things. I always try to set my comics pretty close to the real world.
Okay.
And I've done three different series now, and they all interrelate, and I've done a couple novels in that series. So it's all one body of work, technically. Just one big multiverse, not multiverse, but just one big continuity.
Okay.
Even though they're written for different audiences and they have different tones.
Interesting.
So I know that world pretty well. But because it's pretty close to our world, people think they know it better than me. And I get into these, most of the arguments I get into are about the real world wouldn't be like that. They wouldn't pass legislation like that, or that's not the way the laws work. I'm going, I think I know, but it's what they say is whenever you release a work, it's no longer yours.
Yes, that is true. It becomes that of the public, and you are no longer in control of it, which is liberating at some extent, but it can be frustrating. We're talking to Scott Bachman. He is a writer, web comics provocateur. You've got a Kickstarter coming out too that you're looking to promote here. And you're getting ready to launch a Kickstarter for a kid's book that you're writing. Yes.
Yeah, in addition to all the other things I like to make, yeah. I've been doing some illustrated books over the course of years. When I run into an artist, it just depends on the story. Okay. Sometimes I've come up with the story first and found an artist, and other times I've met an artist and go like, I want to write for you. And this particular book is exactly like that.
Okay.
The artist is Angela Fullard. And I met her while we were both doing an anthology for somebody else. She had roughly the last story in the book, and I had like the third story in the book. And I thought her story really nicely ended the anthology.
Uh-huh.
It was all about monsters. And so I contacted her because, you know, we're kind of in a group, in a private Facebook chat for putting the book together. And I said, I really liked your work. I loved how it ended. I started checking out her other work, and she's got this quirky, it's not quite paranormal, but it's kind of a spooky vibe.
Okay.
But cute. If you could combine cute and the macabre, you would get her style.
Okay.
She's now doing an ongoing webcomic about a girl and an oddling.
Oh, fun. That sounds cool.
Her oddlings are like demons and fairies, but not quite either one. They're not really mean, but they kind of look like they should be.
Okay.
Just quirky world.
Okay, so what is this this kid's book about? Now, this is like a traditional kid's book in the sense like there's prose and illustration and prose and illustration, correct?
Yep.
All right, now what is this book about?
Anthony Fox does not believe in ghosts.
Ah, that's a good title. Anthony Fox does not believe in ghosts. Okay.
And of course, he gets haunted, and ghosts try to convince them he should be afraid, and he tries to convince the ghosts that they don't exist.
Okay.
And he's a very wise fox, and he'll be the first person to tell you that he's a very wise fox. So it's wise guy versus the supernatural.
Okay.
And they're incredibly cute illustrations by Angela.
They look amazing. I'm on your Facebook page now. Your Kickstarter page now. They do look pretty amazing.
And there's all kinds of ghosts and spooky stuff in the background.
Uh-huh.
Because I know in kid books, I love to find things.
Yes.
So I told her, okay, we're going to walk through the woods, but make sure you put all kinds of scary stuff hiding in the background and just sort of poking. So there's like eyeballs everywhere.
That's fun. Is there a midget hanging themselves in the back somewhere?
Like, no, it's not that dark.
Now, did you ever see The Wizard of Oz and hear that story and try to find it?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like the ghost in Three Men and a Baby. I don't know if you're familiar with that one too. Have you heard of that one?
No, that one I haven't heard.
Yeah, there's supposedly a ghost at some point in Three Men and a Baby. I guess you can look it up on the interweb or something. But that's neither here nor there.
And the Kickstarter is pretty easy to find. If you put Anthony Fox into the search, it'll come up.
Okay.
One of the things I had fun doing is it breaks the fourth wall the entire time.
Okay, that's cool.
The fox is talking back and forth with the narrator. The narrator's telling a story, but the fox is kind of listening to it and commenting back.
Interesting. Okay.
The other characters are in the story and I'm not paying attention to the narrator.
Interesting.
So it has a weird kind of quirky tone. It's funny, but it's dark. I guess the best way to get the humor is if you go to the Kickstarter and just play the video. I had a blast making the video.
Okay.
Took my own voice and did the ghost reverb, blah, 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 all that fun stuff. But I took one of Angela's ghosts and I ran it through Adobe Character Creator and animated it.
Oh, that's fun.
So we have the ghost telling the story.
Interesting.
I think I spent more time making the video for the Kickstarter than I did writing the original book.
That's really funny.
Angela just threw herself into it. She loved the project. This is the first time she ever worked completely digital.
Really?
Yeah, usually she's pen and ink or brush and ink. And for this, she had just gotten a tablet and was starting to work with it. And so this is the first time she ever did anything digital, and it's amazing. But because it was digital, if we ever wanted to make tweaks or changes, it was pretty easy to do.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, the illustration looks amazing. Like it looks really cute and wonderful. So, I mean, this thing looks pretty great, Scott. I think you're on to something really amazing here. Now, like, is there a formula you have for writing a children's book like this? Is it more prose than like comic bubbles, if you will, than balloons? Or how did you go about writing this thing?
When I go illustrated books, I usually, I've done every one of them slightly differently.
Okay.
The only rule that I make is the art gets a full page. And I'm not putting words over the art because I hate it.
Okay.
I just feel terrible to do a beautiful picture book and cover it up with words.
That makes sense.
It's hard enough to do in comics. Because I do the lettering in my own comics, and I'm like, I don't want to cover it up. I made too many words. I'll just shove it up. I'll just cut the words out.
Okay. Okay.
But this is the third book I've done like this, and it just flowed really nicely. I kind of had the voice for the fox in my head from the very beginning, because I looked at Angela's work and I knew I wanted to do some kind of ghost story. And it popped in my head, the main character is not going to believe in ghosts. And so it's an instant conflict. I don't know where the fox part came in, but as soon as it was a very wise fox, I knew he had to be a smart aleck.
Yes.
And it was far more, and as I was writing it, it really became the narrator and me and the fox arguing back and forth.
Okay. All right. That sounds interesting.
Character took over completely. I had to have a sidekick in the beginning to help tell what's going on. So I introduced Scaredy the cat.
Okay.
And give you an idea, the tone of the book is he's introduced as Scaredy the cat, the very well-named cat. And every picture you see him, he looks terrified.
Well, that, I mean, that's what you're going for when you're scaring the cat. Yes.
I mean, if you're going to have a Dickinsonian, how do you say that?
I think Dickinsonian was good.
Dickinsonian name, lean into it.
Yeah, you might as well. You might as well just go for it.
It is a little dark, but it's funny at the same time.
Okay.
Like, you find out the ghost was actually, he tells you right up, he used to be a deer and a hunter killed him.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Now, so you're just going right for it then.
Going right for it. And he scares, his job now is to scare every human out of the forest.
Interesting. Okay.
And Anthony goes like, I'm not a human. Why are you bothering me?
See, now I would think Anthony would want to keep the ghost would want to keep all the animals out of the forest so he didn't get shot, so they didn't get shot by the hunters. But he just wants.
I didn't go that deep philosophically.
Okay, but he wants to keep all the animals out then. Okay, that's cool too. I'm down with that. All right. He wants to keep all the hunters out of the woods so they don't shoot animals. I'm totally down with that.
So it gets a little bit dark, but it's played in such a light tone. It's kind of like the Addams, not the Addams Family, even though that fits, but the original Addams Family cartoons.
Okay.
Not the cartoons, but the illustrated drawings.
Yes.
There's a long tradition of telling dark stories, but cute.
Yes.
And people
think about all the Disney cartoons and all the Disney movies, like Every Parent Dies. I mean, that's like the Disney movie trope. Like,
right.
You know, in Dumbo, the family separated. In Bambi, the mother dies. I mean, it just happens in every Disney movie, you know? So a lot of the Disney films, which are for kids, are rather dark.
And that's what I didn't quite lean into it, but that's why I didn't hesitate in anything that I was telling in a story, because kids can take a lot more than we give them.
Yes, exactly.
And they know when you're talking down to them or trying to be too cute.
Yes.
I think I had a point with that, and I just completely lost it.
I mean, I think it is a good point, though. Like, I think you're doing a good job with this. You're not underestimating the intelligence and, maturity of your audience. If you will.
Exactly. I tried to keep from using $10 words when a $1 word would do.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I don't shy away from being a little complicated. I think kids like to be challenged, but things can also work at multiple levels. They don't have to understand everything in a story to get a story.
No, I agree. I think that makes a lot of sense because, I mean, like, you know, my daughter is at the moment, she's reading Thor, not Thor, excuse me. She's reading Conan the Barbarian, for Marvel Comics. And I'm sure she doesn't get everything, but she gets most of it, and she's really enjoying herself with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Like when I wrote our Supermom, all 12 issues, it was an all-ages comic, but I wrote it for both adults and kids.
Yes.
And by doing so, when kids show up, they talk like kids. They don't talk like adults that are short. And I try to keep things so that they can get too complicated as an adult storyline.
Yes.
And I kept it from getting too violent or dark, but I didn't shy away from complicated topics. I mean, I grew up on Rudyard Kipling, and Treasure Island was freaking dark.
Yeah.
Tolkien is dark.
Yeah.
Complicated stories challenge you. When it's too simple and too easy, it doesn't really stick, I think.
That makes sense. So with this, you're kind of going a little bit darker, and I think it's there. It seems like you're really enjoying yourself with the story. The Kickstarter is live right now. You've got 23 days to go. This thing looks like it looks amazingly cute. It looks amazingly adorable. And I mean, there's some challenges to it too, but I think you're really going all in on this thing, and I'm rooting for you, man. This thing looks pretty great.
Yeah, it's one of these books that when people see it, they love it. I don't have to sell it at all. The hard part is getting it in front of people's eyes.
Yes, that's always the hard part with anything. You know that. You've been doing this for a really long time.
And I got to say, of all the comic people that I've run into over the years, because I think you started after me, or you were just starting about the same time.
I was probably around the same time.
But you hustled more than anybody I know. And that's how you got somewhere with your books.
Well, yeah, because you have to. Like,
you have to.
You know, this weekend, I drove to Virginia Beach, Virginia to promote Metal Shark Bro. Because, I mean, you have to do it. You know, like you have to go where people are. No one's going to promote your book better than you will. No one's going to hustle harder than you will. So, like, yeah, you have to hustle to get these things out there. I mean, think about how many books are on Kickstarter right now. You know, and you're doing an all ages book, and you're not even doing an all ages comic. You're doing like an old school, like illustrated book, which I think the audience for is even smaller. So, I mean, you have to hustle to get something like this, you know? So I commend you, sir. I mean, it's a very brave reach, and I'm rooting for you. You know that.
Well, I'm pretty good at taking what's the worst possible way to make money and the most difficult way to tell a story, and that's what I'm going to.
There you go. I mean, that's the way to do it, though. I mean, if it's not hard, it's not worth doing, you know?
Well, I love doing, you come by my table and you see this incredibly range of stuff.
Yes.
Grown-ups, little kids, fantasy, realistic, all over the edge.
Dude, you've even made like card games and things of that nature.
Yeah, that one I kind of backed into. That was kind of a weird story. I was doing handouts like, here's my website, blah, 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 which everybody does. And after one show, I found a bunch of them on the floor. And one that I'm like, oh, right to the gut. And I said, you know, if I made these things collectible, maybe they wouldn't throw them out.
Yeah.
And I came up with the idea of making... Well, the other thing is, because my main comic at that time was our Supermom, and on the cover is always the mom and sometimes the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We had a running joke. It was always a wraparound cover, and Dad was always on the back. He was never on the front. But it didn't show the range of characters that I had. And you wouldn't know about that unless you actually read the book.
Yes.
No real way of promoting it. So I said, okay, I'm going to make a set of 9 trading cards that are all various heroes of my book to show the range of heroes that I got. And I'm going to make them like Pokemon cards.
Very smart.
And so I figured out all the Pokemon type stats, made it look like, well, magic cards, Pokemon cards, whichever you want to call it. And got a ton of these printed up. And now more people know about my characters from the business cards than they ever have read my books.
Well, there you go, dude. I mean, that's a pretty smart way to go about it.
And I did such a good job on it because the front part was a trading card and the back part was the contact information. Mm-hmm. I did so well that I could put all nine in a card sheet and sell it for $2. I sold business cards. And people love it.
That's awesome.
Well, and then after like about 2 years of doing this, everyone asked me, well, when's the card game coming out? There was never going to be a card game. It was just a gimmick. And I kept asking. I'm like, well, heck, if people want a card game, I'll go make a card game. How hard could it be? It's hard. Oh, my gosh. So I got into a whole nother world of publishing and printing and box design. And the card game is the most complicated thing I did. And it's available right now through drivethroughcards.com.
There you go.
But one of the fun things we did is going back to about webcomics, not too far down the line, I ran into a bunch of other superhero comics on the web. And they had kind of a group called Collective of Heroes. And they would all cross promote each other, which, you know, you've heard of web rings and those kind of things.
Yeah.
This was like that, but more well organized. And I got into that group. And they have what they have is a widget. And every week it rotates to the next comic in the group. And everybody has the widget on their page.
Okay.
And if you click on it, expands and you get more information. It shows you all the other comics. So once a week, you get featured on everybody's page. And you go from, you know, maybe 1,000 people visit to 10,000 people visiting that week.
Yeah.
Huge jump. And they're already hero comic fans, so they're more likely to stick around. Well, I stayed with the group, and we kept getting more and more involved. We started doing free comic book day giveaways, where it was just an anthology of everybody just threw some stuff in and we put it up on Drive Through Comics. And then we started doing a Secret Santa where we would do holiday comics of each other.
Okay.
But one person set it up so we didn't know who the other person was.
Oh, that's cool.
It was a cute thing. Then we decided we wanted to do it for Halloween and somebody came up with the idea we should call it Secret Satan. And Secret Santa.
All right.
And after I came up with my card game, I said to the group, hey, I want to do an expansion set with all of you guys. You give me some characters and I'll put them into the card game.
That's pretty cool.
Templates and everything figured out. So I just need your art and so a little bit of description. Boom, I can make the cards. With the idea being, they'll sell cards because they're in it.
Yeah.
I'll sell cards because I'm in it. Uh-huh. And mutually we'll sell a whole bunch of cards. And it didn't work.
That was a really long story for, yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work.
You would have read that story. Didn't work, but that's a whole other.
It was a great idea.
It's not the worst idea ever, but I mean, it does. I mean,
the expansion set looks really cool. And everybody loved to see their characters in a card game.
But it just, yeah.
But none of them wanted to go sell cards.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard enough to sell comics, so selling cards can be pretty tough too. But yeah, the Kickstarter is live right now. I just backed the Kickstarter. It's called Anthony Fox Does Not Believe in Ghosts. You can go to Kickstarter right now. You can check that out. Scott, it's a pleasure to have you on, man. Thank you so much. Everybody's rooting for you. You're a good dude. You've been doing this a long time. And we hope your book takes off, my friend.
And congrats on Metal Shark Bro.
Well, it's not about me, Scott. This is about you and all the things you're working on. But yes, thank you. We're trying, man. We're trying. Just like you, it's a grind and it never ends. And I game respects games. That's why that's another reason why we're having you on the pod. So thank you very much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks much.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.